We don't sit around Washington, D.C. and decide what's good for small business. Our members tell us, and then we go fight for them.
The Small Business Rundown is the official podcast of the National Federation of Independent Business, the member-driven voice of small business. NFIB and our members advocate to keep America's small businesses strong and independent in Washington, D.C., all 50 states, and the nation's courts.
Welcome to the Small Business Rundown, a biweekly podcast with information on independent businesses' victories and challenges in Washington, D.C. and state capitals. I'm Adam Temple, NFIB Senior Vice President of Advocacy. NFIB has been the voice of small business since it was founded in 1943, and this year we're celebrating NFIB's 80th year advocating on behalf of America's small and independent business owners both in Washington, D.C. and in all 50 state capitals. Joining us today are two folks that know a thing or two about NFIB's history, NFIB President Brad Close and trainer Randy Karshner. Welcome, Brad. Welcome, Randy.
Thanks for having me, Adam.
Good to be here.
NFIB is a member-driven, nonprofit organization, so it feels appropriate to start by hearing from the owner of a small business that's been a member for nearly our entire existence. A few weeks ago, our team interviewed Robert Light Jr., who is the owner of Cooker Rankin, a small business that has been an NFIB member for 79 years.
I'm Robert H. Light Jr. Most people call me Bob. I am the current owner of a small company here in Seattle, Washington, called Cooker Rankin. Cooker Rankin is a supplier of electronic surveying measurement equipment for architects, engineers, construction, land surveyors. We also are a manufacturer of a product called the Cooker Rankin Hand Level that was produced in 1928, and we still produce them today. Cooker Rankin started in 1928. I remember when I walked in the first time in 1977 that the NFIB sign was on the door. I had no idea that at that time we were members 49 years. Today, it's now 79 years that we've been a member of the NFIB. It has been a wonderful relationship. I went from not knowing what NFIB was until taking over the business in 2005 when a NFIB rep came in and introduced me to the NFIB membership. And that's pretty much when I got involved in NFIB and recognized that we do have a voice as small businesses. The value in my membership is that I get a voice. I truly do get a voice on what happens in the legislature. It's something that most people don't quite understand. They may donate to the NFIB, but they don't participate in it. And by participating is your voice gets heard. Your vote counts when it comes to bad regulations and bad bills. A couple times a year, NFIB sends out samples of bills that we are looking to support or fight. At that time, we get to choose and pick what fights we want to have. So as, for instance, the B&O tax came out that was going to hurt small businesses, we were able to make sure that it was capable of accommodating small businesses. With the business and occupation tax, we were able to get tax relief for 276,000 companies that did not have to pay the full vote of the small business tax. In fact, they got credits up to $125,000 in exempt from B&O tax. This was a substantial win for NFIB and small businesses that normally the bill would have just been pushed through, and we had to accept what the legislature gives us. We no longer have to accept what the legislature gives us. We can actually negotiate a better deal and fight for us small business owners. Cooker Rankin has been an NFIB member for 79 years now, and we are very proud to be a member of the NFIB. It has brought me great relief to know that there's an organization out there that you can be proud to be a member of.
It's great to hear from Bob, and we're honored that he continues to choose to be a member of NFIB. It's small business owners like Bob who make it possible to do the critical advocacy work and fight the legislative and regulatory battles that small business owners tell us they need. Randy, you've worked at NFIB for 37 years and been a crucial figure for our amazing team whose job it is to sign up new members and then renew those members year after year. Can you start by sharing what drew you to become an NFIB employee in the first place?
Adam, being completely honest, I was out of work and badly in need of a job, any job, where I could make some money. I was introduced to NFIB through a headhunter, and the division manager working for NFIB who interviewed me convinced me that all I needed to do as a membership representative was tell how NFIB was a necessary voice for small business owners at the state and federal levels. I was to share that message with as many independent business owners as possible every day, and that by doing so, I would be getting paid for helping people. I thought, well, I can do that. So April 14, 1986, I began, and I've never looked back.
That's great. Can you tell us the story about how NFIB was founded?
Wilson Harder was our founder. He grew up in a small business family. His mom and dad pioneered commercial fishing on Lake Michigan. And as a young adult growing up in a small business family, he got that entrepreneurial blood transfusion, I guess you could say. After his mom and dad had been quite successful in that commercial fishing endeavor, they sold the business and moved to warmer climates in California. And there, Wilson completed his schooling and with his father's financial help, purchased an automobile dealership. The unfortunate part was this was during the Great Depression of 1929 and the early 30s. And when people couldn't afford food, they didn't buy cars. So Wilson did not succeed as an entrepreneur. After walking away from his dealership, he went to work for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and he stayed there for 12 years. However, as an employee, he found himself a bit disgruntled at the chamber because on several occasions, he watched small business concerns put on the back burner while they catered to big business desires. And Wilson dreamed of an organization that would only be concerned with small business issues. So Harder was also concerned because it was 1942 and the nation was fighting World War II. He knew that when the soldiers returned from World War I, there were no jobs for them to come home to. And now, during these war times, as the monopolies that fueled the war machine were growing out of control, Harder wondered what the soldiers would do when World War II ended and they came home. What would they be doing for work? So bottom line, Wilson Harder resigned from the chamber and incorporated the National Federation of Small Business on May 20, 1943 in San Mateo, California. Harder signed up our original members, Adam, by calling upon them and asking something close to, what do you think of an idea of an organization that would alert you to important legislation that's being considered in the Congress? Legislation that's going to affect your business, your pocketbook. This organization would give you a complete digest of the bills being considered and give you an opportunity to express your opinion and then relay those opinions to your members of Congress. If the business owner responded positively and said, yeah, sounds good to me, Harder responded with, fine, give me $8.50 and you're a charter member. On May the 20th, 1943, Harder enrolled a restaurant, a grocery store, Harry Millard, who owned Service Press, two real estate companies, Mr. Litton, who owned Litton's Furniture Store, and finally, a shoe cobbler named Mr. McCann. And with that, the National Federation of Small Business began. 7 sales in one day. Not bad. The member dues were $8.50 for a 2-year membership. Then 2 years later, the dues increased to $9.50 for a 2-year membership, and they remained there until 1950. In 1950, the dues were for 1 year, and a cap of $100 was placed on the annual dues. The cap was begun to prevent any member from contributing a lot of money and then being able to dictate policy to NFIB. On April 1949, then, the name changed from the National Federation of Small Business to the National Federation of Independent Business, NFIB. That happened when Wilson and his wife, Dottie, sold the National Federation of Small Business for $10. Now today, after 80 years, we still as an organization believe in the core principles that Wilson set up. One, we're member-driven because no position is taken without a vote of our membership. Second, each member only gets one vote. Third, no member can exceed the maximum annual dues. And finally, we're a nonpartisan organization. I think that's a rich beginning, Adam.
And all things that are still true today. Randy, in the years that you've been with NFIB, what changes have you seen that has allowed us to remain the nation's leading small business advocacy organization?
Initially, I think the development and the adoption of state-of-the-art technology, that's really helped us improve our messaging to the marketplace and really helped us better serve our external as well as our internal customers. Then I'd say the continued development of our critical grassroots department, their improved cooperation and cross-training with our field and telephone sales teams has been big too. But really, Adam, I think perhaps what's helped NFIB remain the nation's leading advocacy organization is more so what has not changed rather than what has changed. I mean, after 80 years, as we just pointed out, still member-driven, we still adhere to one member, one vote. We continue to have limited maximum member dues, and we're nonpartisan. So by not diluting our attention nor straying from our mission, NFIB is the voice of small business.
And another thing we still do, like Wilson Harder did at the start, is have folks that go around the country and meet with small businesses and sign them up to be NFIB members. And you've worked with a lot of those folks. What have you found has been the most beneficial training method for the sales team?
Oh, another good question. I think the most important would be the consistency in our methodology. As everyone who provides training in the field, on the telephones, and in the classroom sings the same song, shares the same message, that we go to business the same way. It remains imperative that we have a single message and a manner of presenting it. So training based on best practices rather than individual preferences leads to increased success throughout the organization.
Thank you, Randy. And Brad, what are some of the key moments in NFIB's history that stick out to you?
Yeah, well, I think on the advocacy side, I would look back to the creation of a full-time state government affairs team. I think that is significant. NFIB committed early on to have a state director in every state capital, and that's something you don't see other business trade associations doing. And it's a huge part of what we do. It's a huge part of what our members care about. So being active in state capitals and focusing on state government affairs issues has been crucial. I think back in 2000, we created the Legal Center, and that's been a game changer for small business too. Our Legal Center fights for small businesses in the courts, both state, local, and federal, and that's made a huge difference since 2000 in our members. And then I would say also our Research Center. You know, our Research Center started an economic survey back in the early 70s, the Small Business Economic Trends Report. They're still doing it today, 50 years later, and this looks at how small business owners look at the economy every month, and we've been doing this now for 50 years. It's covered widely. It's great academic research, and I think that was definitely one of the more significant things we've done.
Right, Brad. And will you tell us a few of NFIB's biggest victories in small business advocacy?
Yeah, absolutely. I think looking back in the not-so-distant past, I think one of the big ones was the Supreme Court challenge to Obamacare, to the notion that business owners could be mandated to purchase health insurance. I think NFIB versus Sebelius is still taught that case in law schools and in college, and it was a significant challenge to a dictate from the federal government. Just a few years ago, we had NFIB versus OSHA, which was NFIB's challenge to OSHA's vaccine mandate on business owners, and that was a significant victory that took away a huge concerns of small business owners going forward. And then in 2017, NFIB led the charge to create the small business deduction to allow small business owners to deduct 20% of their business income off their taxes. And this has proven to be a very significant tax break for small businesses.
Yeah. And Brad, what's your message to small business owners who've joined or continued their membership in the last 80 years?
first and foremost, thank you. We couldn't do it without you. It's NFIB's members that make us so strong and so unique. One of the great things about NFIB is we have actual members, small business owners from all backgrounds and all industries all over the country. And it's our small business owner members that make us strong. You know, Randy pointed out that NFIB is very unique from other trade associations. And one of that is one member, one vote. You know, we ballot our members a couple times every year on key issues coming before Congress. We ballot them on key issues coming before their state legislatures. And this is how we set policy. We don't sit around Washington, D.C. and decide what's good for small business. Our members tell us, and then we go fight for them. So to all our members out there, thank you for joining and thank you for voting your ballots.
And looking ahead, what are some of your key goals for NFIB's members in the coming years?
Yeah, I think further engagement. I think the more that Congress, the more that state legislatures and governors can hear from small business, the better. It's hard. You know, small business owners join NFIB because they want someone to fight for them, and that's what we do. But sometimes we need our members to help as well, too. And there's nothing more powerful than a legislator hearing directly from a small business owner in their district on an important issue. So we're always trying to engage new members, new activists, to get them out there. It's really crucial that they hear from you. So I think as we go forward, you know, our top priority at the federal level is this small business deduction of 20%. We want to extend this and keep it going. It is not permanent. It expires in 2 years. If it does expire, most small business owners will face a massive tax increase at the beginning of 2026. So that is our top federal legislative goal. And to get there, we need our small business owners to get engaged, to tell their stories, to be willing to talk to their congressmen in meetings, to be able to talk to the media, and really, really help push this across the finish line.
Absolutely. What can small business owners, or whether they're an NFIB member or not, do to fight this tax increase?
I think the best thing they can do is remind a congressman, senator, what small business owners in their districts mean. You know, all across America, every community, every Main Street is filled with small business owners. They create the jobs. They buy their goods and their purchases locally. They expand. They help their communities, support local sports teams and activities. I think reminding legislators that this is such a key thing that they do. And, you know, really what they're asking by making this tax provision permanent is just to let Congress allow them to keep more of their own money. Yeah. It's not a handout or anything. It's their money in the first place, and they know best how to invest it. And we need their help to remind their congressmen and senators.
Yeah. Before we go, is there anything either of you'd like to add?
I just want to thank you for this opportunity to express how interdependent the United States, free enterprise, independent business, and NFIB are to each other's existence. Thank you.
Thank you, Randy. Brad?
Yeah, and I would just say thank you for your membership. By joining NFIB, you join hundreds of thousands of other small business owners. It allows us to fight for your right to own, operate, and grow your business. We know that investment is significant on everyone's part, but we are out there fighting for you every day in the state capitals, Washington, D.C., and in the courts. We are looking forward to another 80 years of fighting for you and getting out there. So just thank you for what you do. Thank you for making America better. And thank you for your support with NFIB.
Thanks, Brad. I think that's a good place to leave it. Brad mentioned NFIB's top advocacy priority, which is preventing a massive tax increase that's scheduled to affect small business owners at the end of 2025. Members of Congress need to hear from small business owners and supporters of small business on this issue. With that in mind, you'll see a link to smallbusinessdeduction.com in our show notes today, where you can learn more and sign our petition on the issue. Our next episode premieres on January 11th, when we'll start the new year by looking at what's in store for Congress. Brad will be back with us along with Jeff Brabant from our federal government relations team. We'll also be answering questions from our listeners, so if you have one, especially on small business issues being considered in Congress, go ahead and send an email to podcast@nfib.org. And now I want to thank you for listening to today's Small Business Rundown. We'll be back every 2 weeks bringing you news and analysis from Washington, D.C. and state capitals so that you, whether you're a business owner or a supporter of one, can continue to blaze a trail.
The Small Business Rundown is brought to you by NFIB, the voice of small business. You can find us at nfib.com and on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn.